running away from people now. 20, 10, and gone. Moneal, 67-yard touchdown run.
I've got reporters' notebooks older than Seth.
Fonte was always soft. Can't win on the road, they say.
DeVito, pop pass, end zone, touchdown, and the ball game. DeVito, in relief, wins it for the Orange.
This is Orange Nation, brought to you by Charles Heating and Air Conditioning with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
All right, hour number two of Orange Nation underway on ESPN Radio as we come to you live from Attilio's on James, Stephen Fonte, Seth Goldberg with you up until 2 o'clock. No guests lined up this hour. We want to hear from you at 315-437-7644. All right, Seth, this team now 12-7. They've won four in a row, 5-3 in conference play, tied for fourth place in the ACC along with NC State and Virginia Tech. I know you've been kind of slow to come around. Is this team starting to change your mind at all about the 2019-2020 Orange and the prospects of this season?
Starting to, but it's not necessarily because of who they've beaten or how, you know, I don't think it's necessarily because of who they've beaten. I think it's because I think they legitimately look better. You know, I think they legitimately look like a better team now than they were back in November and December. Now, I don't know if that's good enough to eventually get them into the NCAA tournament. I don't know that that's good enough to get them to that point of postseason play. But that's really given the league right now and the state of the ACC, where if you don't beat one of Duke, Louisville, or Florida State, there's a very good chance that you don't have any, you know, resume headlining wins on your resume. And so I think they're better. I really do. I think they're significantly better than where they were when they went to the Barclays Center in November and we saw people on TV saying multiple times this is the worst team that Jim Boeheim's ever had. I think they're significantly better than that. I don't know that they're a tournament team at this point, but that has more to do with what's ahead of them.
You know, we've seen this team steadily improve, right? I mean, you referenced the trip down to Brooklyn. They were non-competitive against Oklahoma State, non-competitive against Penn State. And then a few games go by, and they lose to Georgetown, but it's close. They just couldn't get enough stops in that game. They lose to Notre Dame, lose to Virginia Tech at home. Again, close games that kind of slipped away at the end. And now you're starting to see them win these games, go on the road, win close games. They beat Virginia after falling behind late against Virginia, came back, tied it up, sent it into overtime, and then they win it in the extra session against Virginia Tech, had the big lead, held them off down the stretch. Again, another double-digit lead last night at Notre Dame, and even though Notre Dame came back to take a one-point lead, they're able to go on a run down the stretch of that game. And Seth, you look at the first meeting against Notre Dame versus the second meeting against Notre Dame, it played out almost exactly the same way, right? 3 minutes left in this game, Syracuse up four, both in the first meeting and in the second meeting. The first time around, Notre Dame went on an 8-3 run. John Mooney made a couple big plays down the stretch. Notre Dame wins it. Last night, game tied at 70. Syracuse goes on an 8-0 run, makes all its free throws down the stretch, did the little things they needed to do to get the win. And again, I think it's easier to see improvement when you see the same opponent, the same situation, but a different end result. And I think we saw that last night.
Yeah, you know, I thought the same exact thing. I said it last night. I was working in our office on the Twitch watch party, and I was sitting out at the computer, and I was like, man, this is the same game. I said, it's the same game. They have a lead with a couple minutes left. They blew this lead 2 weeks ago. Like and you didn't feel good about where that game was last night because they had blown that lead just a couple of weeks prior. So I think that, you know, to your point, it's really easy to see that tangible improvement with this team, given that they played in such a similar situation. But rather than being on your home floor where you should feel comfortable, where you should feel good about your chances, you were in the other team's building in what could have turned into, I don't know that it was, but what could have turned into a tough environment had Notre Dame hit another shot or two. And all of a sudden, you could have been looking at, well, here we go again. Instead, like you mentioned, that 8-0 run towards the end, it shows real tangible growth in that team.
And for the second game in a row, we see the opponent score double-digit threes. It was, you know, 15 on Saturday against Virginia Tech, 13 last night. Syracuse only made 8. It was 15 against 6 on Saturday, 13 against 8 last night in terms of three-pointers. Yet Syracuse won both games in part because they won the rebounding battle and in part because they were able to dominate points in the paint. Syracuse with 36 points in the paint last night to 26 for Notre Dame. And again, that's saying a lot given the fact that John Mooney's on the other side and Syracuse able to win that category. We've seen this team become more than just a live-by-the-three, die-by-the-three team. They're growing. They're evolving. And again, they're getting better on the offensive end. They're not just a one-trick pony, so to speak. They have other ways to score, other ways that can beat you. And again, I think that is a very encouraging sign because you figure the defense is only going to get better. The offense is there. They've got a lot of ways to score, a lot of different options on offense, and you figure the defense is only going to get better as the season progresses.
Yeah, and the defense has gotten a little bit better. I mean, it's not significantly better, but it's gotten a little bit better. I think the interesting thing with the offense, and we talked about this with Griff, is that early in the year, it was easy to see why they were good. Early in the year, it was easy to see why they were a good offensive team, and it was because they had great ball movement, they were finding open shooters, Elijah Hughes, Joe Girard, Buddy Boeheim were knocking down their open shots when they got them, and they were getting them because there was great ball movement that got them open. Now, the ball movement's not there because teams are trying to take away those shooters, but the offensive production is at a very similar level to what it was in the non-conference when they were moving the ball well. And I think that that's a really interesting mark of a good offensive team. They can play offense in different ways. They can get things going differently, you know, given the opponent and given the game plan. We saw Buddy Boeheim last night went 0 for 5 from 3, but hit 5 shots inside the 3-point arc. And we saw that again against Virginia Tech, where, yeah, he hit his threes, but he hit those 5 shots inside the 3-point arc. And you're seeing growth out of these different players. Elijah Hughes in the post the last 2 games. They've done different things, and you can see how that game has expanded and evolved given what other teams are willing to give you.
We saw 7 players get in last night. Howard Washington unavailable because of the ankle injury. Bryson Goodine came in and did some good things the final 3.5 minutes of that first half. 7 guys played last night, Seth, and I would argue that they all played well. Like, was there one guy that didn't play well? I mean,
no.
You could point to, you know, Joe Girard had kind of an off game against Virginia Tech. Didn't last night. Had no turnovers. Played 40 minutes. Had no turnovers. Finished with 15 points. He was great in the first half and then hit his free throws down the stretch of that game. Elijah goes without saying. He scored 26. Barama, 6 for 6 from the field. He did some good things. Buddy didn't make a 3, but as you just alluded to, had 5 twos. Marek just continues to do Marek things. Had the last basket of the game, that spinning shot that ended up going. Quincy provided, you know, some plays on the backboards, had a couple of offensive rebounds. He finished with 9 points, 5 boards, and I mentioned Bryson came in and provided 4 quality minutes when Buddy got into foul trouble and picked up the third foul. He played the last, you know, 3:34 of that first half. Had 2 offensive rebounds, hit his first 3 of the season, and played great defensively on that final possession of the break. They go in. It could have been an even game. They could have been down a couple points at the break. And because of Bryson Goodine, they're up 4. I thought everybody who got in last night, I thought they played well and they did some really good things.
Yeah, I think that I think that you got solid, positive contributions from everybody on the floor. You could say Marek Dolezal didn't play his best game. You're right. He was still good. You know, he still was a positive contributor to that team. I think that what Bryson Goodine did last night, and I know he only played 4 minutes, I think that was so huge. I think that was so important. And, you know, it's something that I'm really looking forward to talking with Jerry McNamara about at some point. And we don't have a GMAC show on Monday. We've got one the following Monday. But, you know, he was I the thing that stuck out anytime I think about Bryson is how confident Jerry was that Bryson is a good player, that Bryson is somebody who is not only like a college player, but a difference maker at the college level. And, you know, you look at what he had done so far this year, and he never got comfortable. He got jumped over in the point guard rotation by Joe Girard, or at least it seems like it, given what we had seen in Italy and then in the 2 exhibition games. And then he goes and he's, you know, falling out of the rotation. He's missing every 3 he takes. He's missing. You remember that game in the Dome a couple weeks ago where he's missing all the layups? And then he breaks his nose. And like you just feel terrible for the kid because everything's going wrong. And I think that for him to come in, get those two offensive rebounds, go ahead and hit that three-pointer, I think it was such a big confidence boost for him that, you know, maybe he does eat away at some of those Howard Washington minutes. Because as much as, you know, I love the Howard Washington story, and I think that it's a great piece, and that he is clearly a calming influence, if you give Bryson Goodine half of those minutes or three-quarters of those minutes, and he's not a guy that you can totally ignore offensively, and maybe he's a little springier defensively, I think that that's a beneficial piece to have on your team.
I don't know if they're splitting minutes. It seems like it's going to be one guy or the other, right? It's either going to be Howard's going to come in or Bryce is going to come in.
Maybe if Bryson takes those minutes,
right?
You know, I think that that is something that is
and this is his opportunity. And you hate to see Howard, you know, struggling with another injury, but while Howard's out and we don't know if he'll be back in time for the Pitt game, this is Bryson's opportunity. And I think that says a lot about the character of this kid to go through everything he's gone through and to stay ready. And last night he was ready. He didn't know if he was going to play, but then Buddy gets in foul trouble and all of a sudden, you know, Bryson, we need you for 3.5 minutes. And he provided three and a half really good minutes. And as I said, I talked with Jerry this morning, and when Bryce won the game, the Notre Dame players said, don't guard him. We don't need to guard him. And then he goes out and he hits a three and he has a couple of offensive rebounds, extends possession.
And so isn't that the biggest difference between that and the Howard Washington minutes? Because we saw in the Virginia Tech game, hey, we don't need to guard this guy. And they didn't guard him, and he missed two threes, and missed them pretty badly. So, again, it's not a knock on Howard Washington. And to be quite honest, before last night, Bryson Goodine wasn't hitting that shot either. But he might give you a better opportunity to hit that shot.
He's a good defender. He's a good defender. He's long. He's athletic. Again, picked up a couple offensive rebounds last night. I was very impressed with what he did in limited action. All right, let's go to the phone lines at 315-437-7644. Scott in Liverpool, kicking off hour number two here of Orange Nation. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. What do you got for us today?
Well, I don't know about you guys. I've never seen, I've seen a lot of basketball, especially SU, but that shot where I forgot what the guy who hit it, where the shot clock was winding down and he just threw it up and it went in.
Yeah, Prentice.
I mean, didn't you just feel like it was going in? Like, I felt like, oh, here we go. I just said, oh, here comes a bailout three, and sure enough, feel like, I know, almost like a sky hook from the three-point range, and it went in. And I'm like, it figures. It just makes sense because we were on that run there, and then the bailout three. But I guess the other reason why I'm calling is, you know, this team is, before our eyes, each week is getting better. I mean, I kind of counted them out. I'm like, where's the offense going to come from? Defensively, they were horrible. But the last few games, they've been so active. On every aspect of it, the guards have been everywhere, the sliding, the wherever they, sometimes they get sucked up a little too far, I think, and they got that back door. But I think with what's his name, the guy that subs in, I can't think of his name, with the dreads.
Quincy Guerrier?
Yeah, when he comes in, he gives them a lot more activeness on that back line, and because he's so athletic, can get back. But then you got Dolje being everywhere. But I just think they're just getting more confidence, and it's going through the whole team. And I don't care who it's against, but when you win these games on the road, that's so huge and does everything for your confidence just going forward. And I think Saturday will show going home, and hope everybody stands on their feet for what these guys have done on the road because they deserve it. I'll listen to you guys.
I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I mean, this team is 4-0 in ACC play right now on the road. And I do think that there is something to be said for that, Seth, about young teams in particular learning how to win close games. And they didn't play really any close games early in the season. We talked about them being non-competitive in Brooklyn, non-competitive against Virginia. I feel like the Georgetown game was relatively close, but that one slipped away. And then those games at home against Notre Dame and Va Tech and Syracuse probably should have won both of them, but a young team that hadn't been in a lot of close games let both of those slip away. And I do think that there is something to be said for young teams learning what it takes to do the little things right, to value each possession, in order to win close games. And I think we've seen that these last 2 weeks. Three of these four wins have gone right down to the wire. The Virginia game went into overtime, and then you had these two that went down to one possession, Vatek and Notre Dame. They've figured it out to some degree. Doesn't mean they're going to win every close game, but now they know what it takes. And I think Scott's right. I think they have a lot of confidence in these close games now that when the game is tied or they fall behind by a possession, they're going to figure it out and find a way to win the game.
Yeah, I think you're right. And we've talked about this a number of times that, you know, it takes a while to figure out where you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to do, and how you're supposed to act, I think, in these close games. You know, Elijah Hughes was not the go-to guy last year. Buddy Boeheim was probably not on the floor in crunch time last year. Marek Dolezal was probably on the floor, but he certainly wasn't being asked to be a facilitator of any kind. Joe Girard wasn't asked to be a point guard at any point last year in his high school career. Like, all of these people are in very different positions than they were last year, whether it's with Syracuse or elsewhere. And so I think that it had to take a little while, and by playing every non-conference game or every game before the new year decided by 10 points or more, you didn't have that opportunity to work out the kinks before you got to these games. And so it resulted, I think, in the losses against Virginia Tech and Notre Dame at home, but they've managed to learn from that, turn it around, and get the wins on the road again in close games.
All right, we got to take another timeout. 315-437-7644. We're coming to you live from Attilio's on James. Stephen Fonte, Seth Goldberg with you. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Stephen, Seth back with you on a Thursday edition of Orange Nation. We've got the television version of Orange Nation coming your way tonight, 7:30 to 8 o'clock on News Channel 9. I'll talk with Jerry McNamara, as I do every week, and Kiki Lewis, the women's point guard, is the player that we will be spotlighting on the show tonight. So join us from 7:30 to 8 on News Channel 9. We're going to switch gears here a little bit, Seth. We have to talk about the big football news from yesterday. We laid out the 2020 schedule. After we left the air, though, Pete Thamel, the first to report that Zach Arnett, SU's new defensive coordinator, who had been on the job literally 11 days, or at least that's when Syracuse announced that they were hiring Zach Arnett. It was 11 days, now 12 days ago, back on January 11th. Zach Arnett leaving to take the same position, the DC job, at Mississippi State under Mike Leach. I think it caught a lot of us by surprise. But 2 weeks before the next big signing day, Syracuse without a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, again. They've got to go find another defensive coordinator. And, you know, it's interesting because I sent a tweet when they announced the hiring. Because remember, none of us really knew that this was coming when it was announced, back 11 days ago. And I tweeted something out. I said, a couple really interesting things. Bringing in someone from outside. Two, he ran a really good defense and typically a high offense league. Three, I'd imagine he probably had some options after running a top 10 defense. And I think that we kind of just saw what happened with three. You know, I think that you saw, oh, this guy had options. And, you know, at the end of the day, going to a middle-of-the-pack SEC team is better than being at a bottom-of-the-pack ACC team. And I think that you can argue that being in the middle of the pack of the SEC is better than being in the middle of the pack of the ACC. So it's a career decision for him. Reports out there yesterday, and I think that Syracuse.com attributed it to John Wildhack, and I've heard the same thing, but they matched the contract offer, and they offered him 2 years and $900,000 a year. So it wasn't necessarily only a money thing, but it was what made sense for Zach Arnett, and he went ahead and did it.
Yeah, and again, going by what we've seen through various reports, he said, I can't turn down a job in the SEC. And so, I understand what you're saying about being a middle-of-the-road SEC team. It is the SEC, and, you know, the money is there. I think the encouraging thing for SU fans to take from this, and I know it feels like a punch to the gut that, you know, the guy you wanted gets away for the same position at a middle-of-the-road SEC program, but the thing I think you could take away from a positive from this aspect is that it sounds like SU's willing to pay.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
And that's, you know, that is a change from the past. And it seems like, you know, obviously Dino is serious about turning this program around. It sounds like John Wildhack is serious about turning this program around. And to some degree, you need money, right? I mean, you need the players, but you need money for coaches. And you need good coaches to coach those players. And so I thought, you know, number one, you don't want a guy who doesn't want to be here. And so if he doesn't want to be here and he prefers to go to Mississippi State, fine. You'll find the next guy. But I think the fact that Syracuse is willing to match the offer, and again, that's, you know, that's according to what we've been seeing in reports, I think that's a good sign, you know, for SU fans to know that John Wildhack and Dino Babers are serious about turning this thing around.
Yeah, I think it is too. And, you know, not to spin a real negative, because there's no way around it. Like, this is a negative for the program. It absolutely is. But at the same time, like you said, Steve, if they're willing to go up to $900,000 for their coordinator, that's a different place than they've been in the past. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I know what the numbers are, but I think that we both know that they weren't that. You know, you weren't paying near $1 million for your defensive coordinator when it was Chuck Bolla or Brian Ward. That's just not what the budget was for Syracuse football. And I don't know what exactly it is that changed that. I don't know how much the donation from John and Laura Lally that was for $25 million earmarked for certain things was, you know, coming into play there. But you can tell that there's a difference, and you've got to play in the big leagues if you want to be in the big leagues. You know, you got to keep up with everybody. You've got to spend on facilities. You've got to spend on coaches. You've got to spend on different types of things that Syracuse football has not in the past. And I think that this defensive coordinator thing is another example of it. Now, I am interested in something, and I don't know how it's going to play out now after, but when you've been reported that you're willing to go to a certain place for him, how does that affect the next guy you try and hire? You know, how does that affect the next contract that you've got to sign when you've been reported to be willing to go 2 years at $900,000 a year, and you bring in your next defensive coordinator, or forget it, the guys on the staff now, like, forget those guys for a second, but the guy that you want to bring in to be the defensive coordinator and say, hey, here's what we're going to offer you, 1 year with an option for a second, and it's for $650,000. It's like, well, there's reports out there that you just offered this. Like, how does that, what's the game there? Like, well, that's never been something that Syracuse right. has had to deal with. Never.
I think it gives the next guy some leverage, right? I mean, I think it does. And, you know, are you going to find a guy who is as valuable in your eyes as Zach Arnett? And it's a negotiation process, and everybody's got a number, and, you know, they really, really wanted Zach Arnett, and they matched the offer, and he got away. Now, if you bring in a guy of his caliber and his value, then, yeah, I think it stands to reason you would expect them to ante up and to pay, you know, $800,000, $900,000, whatever the case may be. I think it gives that next guy some leverage. You asked me, you know, how that plays out. I think it gives them some leverage. And in terms of the guys on the staff currently, listen, we're talking about a coordinator position. So, you know, they just brought in a new offensive coordinator. They're looking to lock up a defensive coordinator. That position, a little more important than, say, you know, the linebackers
sure
coach. So I don't know how
which
much.
Which is also now open because that was right, also Zach
right,
Arnett's job.
Right. which is, yeah, so maybe that was a bad example. But, you know,
I know
a position
mean,
coach
yes.
over a coordinator. So I don't know how much it affects the guys currently there. I mean, everybody understands there is a pecking order, and the coordinators underneath the head coach, the coordinators are the next important, you
of
know,
course
in,
they are.
Most important. Important in line. So we'll see how it all plays out. But, yeah, I think it definitely brings that next guy some leverage. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got John in Syracuse. He's been waiting on hold to talk SU hoops and SU football. Hey, John, how are you today?
Hi, man. I'll make this quick, but it's not NFL football. It's just a coincidence between the two. You think Antonio Brown is suffering from brain damage from the hit that he took in Cincinnati from Perfect? And number two, is it also a coincidence that yesterday I asked for Hughes to play at the charity stripe, and yesterday he was playing at the charity stripe? It's almost as if Mr. Bayhack is listening to your show.
I think the coaches maybe that was a great point, John. And yeah, we saw that to some degree against Virginia Tech, right? That Elijah Hughes did some damage at the free throw line and used his size and backed down and hit that turnaround jumper. And we saw it certainly against Notre Dame as well. That, you know, he's not going to be able to do that against everyone in terms of, you know, how much size the opponent has, but Virginia Tech, not a big team. Notre Dame, not really a big team. And he was able to take advantage of it. And set that shot is virtually unguardable. When he hits that turnaround with the length that he has and his athleticism, and he's got such a feathery touch, he's unguardable, that 15-footer. So, yeah, that was a great point, John.
Yeah, I think that watching him the last couple of games go to work in the post has been really interesting. Not something we had seen all that much before, but he's just been so good when he can back down his man and you kind of get him the ball somewhere between 12 and 15 feet, any angle to the basket, baseline, elbow, foul line, you know, all the way around. He's able to make it work, and it's either getting to the basket, you know, backing his man down, turning and getting to the rim, or doing that turnaround jumper, Steve, that you mentioned, and he's just kind of perfected it. And it almost seems like he was working on it to perfection until breaking it out in a game, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It feels like he was taking that extra step before he broke it out
in
the game.
And now he's confident with it, and I think we're going to see that as part of his arsenal moving forward. As for Antonio Brown, I want to be careful with the Antonio Brown situation because I don't know, but something clearly
wrong.
Seems wrong.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know if it's mental illness. I don't know if it's CTE. I don't know, but I want to be careful with it because I think he needs help. I do. Is that fair, Seth?
Same thing as I would say. Yep. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to pretend to play one by diagnosing somebody through TV and social media. But something is going on there. Something's going on there.
It's honestly scary. It really is. And I want to be careful with that whole situation because I think we're going to find out that there's something wrong, that it's deeper than just, you know, he had a reputation as being a diva. I think it's much deeper than that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think this is, you know, just AB being AB. I think there is something wrong, and whether, again, whether it's mental illness or CTE or whatever the case may be, head injuries, you know, I don't know. So I'm gonna hold off on making a deep, lengthy comment about Antonio Brown. I hope he gets help, and I hope he turns things around. We do have to take a timeout. We'll get to today's business next on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. Our take on the day's top stories. It's today's business on Orange Nation.
We're brought to you in part by Burdick BMW as we're joined from the studio by our producer, Tommy Hogan. What's up, Tommy?
Before we get into some today's business stuff, I got a question for you guys. We're known to be a pro Mike Lynch show, right?
Yeah, sure.
Mike Leach, I should say.
Yeah, I knew what you were talking about. Yeah.
Does yesterday's stealing of the defensive coordinator from Syracuse change that at all?
No.
No, I still like Mike Leach.
Okay.
Wasn't his fault.
I guess in a way it was.
But it was made an offer and Zach Arnett took it. So he wanted to, yeah, I don't know. I have no ill will toward Mike Leach.
I like him. How could you not like Mike Leach? Come on.
The people, though, we're the voice of. We're here to be the voice of the people and spread to the people, and they might be a little sour now on Mike Leach. So I don't know.
Well, they can.
You know,
they can continue to be sour.
Okay, we're still going to bring them the finest Mike Leach content of the week.
There's going to be a whole lot of Mike Leach content. You know that.
Oh yeah.
There's going to be a whole bunch of it, especially like when his team can win games after not scoring points.
All right, we'll get into some of today's business. And Seth, do you want to make a statement on your quarterback, Eli Manning? He is officially retiring. Do you want to make your thank you speech or anything like that? The floor is yours.
Hall of Famer. I mean, I don't have much else to say. Like, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. And Yeah, I mean, it was a great career. It was a great run. It was a whole lot of fun, and it probably lasted about 2 or 3 years longer than it should have. But Hall of Famer, and that's it in my book.
He's so unappreciative, Tommy.
Like, I guess so.
What do you mean? Because like, it's the only quarterback.
Short and sweet, though, you know?
I know. I don't have. It's the only quarterback I know. I don't have a comparison.
You should be crying right now.
Floor.
You should be sobbing.
No, not crying.
No, you should be sobbing.
Tommy just gave you the floor. He gave you two Super Bowls. He gave your fandom two Super Bowls.
Yes.
I've been a Bills fan my entire life. Like, if Jim Kelly had given me a Super Bowl, yeah, I would have had more to say when he retired than just like, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He stayed. The second thing out of your mouth was he stayed too long. Give
we
me a break.
Seth's I am, a fake
I'm
Giants
triggered
fan.
Now, Tommy.
Yeah, no. Seth's
I'm,
a fake
I'm
Giants
triggered
fan.
By that response.
He was bailing. He was bailing the last couple of years.
Eli Manning. Well, I bail because of Dave. I bail on Dave Gettleman. I'm not bailing on the team. I'm bailing on Dave Gettleman.
Your response was just, he's a Hall of Famer, but he stayed too long. Like, how ungrateful
pathetic.
Are you?
What I wanted to end. I said I ended it at he's a Hall of Famer. It's a Hall of Fame run. He was incredible. I love it. You know, he's the only quarterback I've ever known.
You should be choking up right now.
He got the two Super Bowls.
You're getting warmer here. Okay,
right.
You're getting warmer. But
what
your
else
initial
do you want me to say he's a Hall of Famer.
I want you to leave out that he stayed too long.
I don't want to run through the resume. I'm saying he's a Hall of Famer. I think that it's easy enough to just leave it at that when everybody's debating whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. Just stop having.
But you
stupid
didn't leave it at that. You said
famer.
He's a Hall of Famer, but he stayed too long. Like as a fan, he wasn't asking you to break it down as Seth Goldberg, the broadcaster. He said, as a fan, it's your quarterback, your team, your thoughts on Eli retiring. That should not be your response. I'm upset about it.
Anything
you're
short of your eyes,
you are a grateful fan.
Yep. I agree. Anything short of your eyes,
Tommy,
is disgraceful.
Are you with me on this, Tommy?
100%.
Yeah. All right.
Disgraceful, really. I don't know
if he
should be able to speak for the rest of the segment.
And the fact that he didn't watch a Giants game start to finish all season long
That's
because
true.
Of red zone,
I didn't.
That
I watched
he's
red zone.
A he's a bad fan.
Disgusting.
Can we just
no,
say
no,
that?
He is.
Hooked on
he is.
Red zone. I got hooked on red zone.
It is
like
addictive,
drug.
But
it's
that
amazing.
Is it's the last
That's
year.
That's no excuse.
No, I agree.
I need all the touchdowns.
You should have been watching as much Eli Manning on the sideline as you could. If you were a true Giants fan, that's what you'd be doing. Disgusting.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tommy. I'm upset about this. So go ahead and let's move on.
Well,
you
actually,
gave him the floor. He doesn't deserve the floor.
No, he doesn't. So Steve, this is me and you now. There's been
right,
odds.
Good.
There's been odds for Eli Manning's speech on some things that he might mention or if he cries. I want your take on it. Will Eli Manning cry is at +150. I mean,
so we've got
that's
money.
Free money.
We've got some prop bets here.
Yes,
on,
this is easy
on
money.
Eli's presser. I think that's a no-brainer. Yes, I think
in terms of crying,
is he going to get tears streaming down his face? I don't know about that, but is he going to choke up? I think he's absolutely going to get choked
he is.
Up. Yes.
Peyton Manning did two of these press conferences and credit both of them. Of course, Eli's crying. Yes,
they're an emotional family.
Steve,
he's
why
did
you give him time
I
to talk?
I think it's an emotional thing.
Because I
have the buttons in front of me.
Fair I enough. Can't control him.
I think that it's an emotional time for anybody. I think, of course, they're going to choke up and cry.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy that it's the underdog for him to cry. Another one here. Who will Eli Manning mention first, Peyton or Archie?
I think it's Archie, no doubt.
Yeah, mention the dad first, brother second. I think that's the pecking order. I agree with Seth on that.
Eileen Archie as well. Both -120, according to the sports book at least. Who will Eli Manning thank first? The organization / owner, the odds-on favorite at -150. New York, the fans, or the family?
I'm taking the favorite there. Give me the organization.
So I was thinking it's the organization too, probably. Except, what if he pulls one of those things where he's like, "And of course, I have to thank," you know, like does it at the end?
I feel like
the family always
comes last. I feel like it's always like, "And of course, my wife," and you know,
right?
I feel like it's the privilege of playing for this great organization for 16 years. I think the organization's
first. I think you're probably right.
And if he was a hockey player, it would be organization.
Sure.
Now let's think about it from a gambling perspective. Family is at +500. The value is there.
It's good money.
You got to take
value bet.
Yeah,
you're right.
You know, people always say that's good value, but like if you lose, it's not good value. So sometimes you got to go with the favorites. I think this is a situation of going with the favorite.
Will Eli Manning mention Daniel Jones? Yes or no?
Not a chance. Not a chance.
Really?
See,
yes
not
is a minus
chance. 300. See, Seth and I disagree on this. He says not a chance. Are we talking, like, he's going to take questions, right?
Oh, come on. No, this is in the statement part, isn't it?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. I need clarification. It's just the statement.
I think these props have to just be in the statement because,
I think Daniel Jones is obviously going to come up. Is he going to talk about Daniel Jones in his prepared statement?
No way.
Probably not. I need some clarification on that one, because if we're talking about the entire press conference, I think he absolutely is going to talk Daniel Jones. If it's in his statement, he'll probably keep that
is
to the team
him?
And the fans.
Is he
going to
mention him by name, though, or is he going to be asked about him and be like, yeah, you know, he's a good young player,
blah, blah, blah,
you know, like whatever. He's got a bright future, and like never say his name.
That makes me
so
think.
So you think they clearly do not get along?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so.
The wording of
Eli
it,
certainly
him saying,
seemed like a guy this year who wanted to keep playing, didn't he?
But the question says, will Eli Manning mention Daniel Jones? So that makes it sound like it's his statement, like, will he mention it, not brought up in a question, you know? Plus 200 on the nose.
You know what? I'm staying away from that one. I'm staying away from that pick. I'm not venturing a wager.
I'm going no.
And then the last one, and this isn't even really to do with the statement, will Eli Manning be elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Yes, at minus 1,500.
Yeah, yes. I think that's a no-brainer. Yeah. I really do. And I know that there's this debate, and he's got the 500 career record, and, you know, touchdowns trump all that. Super Bowls trump all that. I look at, you know, that stat that I saw yesterday about, you know, Eli Manning is one of only five players in NFL history to have, you know, at least two Super Bowl MVPs. I mean, the other guys on the list, you know, Terry Bradshaw, Bart Starr, Joe Montana, Tom Brady. I mean, and Eli's the fifth. I mean, yes, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I think that alone makes him a Hall of Famer.
I saw some numbers today about, you know, he's got more touchdown passes than certain quarterbacks, more yards than certain quarterbacks, and kind of the guys that it's like Montana and Elway and, you know, quarterbacks like that, you know, nobody to kind of sneeze at. And then I always go back to my test as well of, because those can get distorted, right? We play in a much higher offensive time now in football. I would also say that a lot of the Hall of Fame is, when you're talking about somebody's case, can you tell the story of the sport without him? Can you tell the story of the sport without this person? And Eli is like emphatically in that category. You know, you cannot tell the story of the Patriots and what they did without including the fact that they got knocked off twice in the Super Bowl by one guy. You know, they got knocked off twice in that reign. Yeah, they went to 9 Super Bowls. That's incredible. They might have had 15 rings if not for Eli and Peyton.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Can you tell the story of baseball without Larry Walker?
Probably.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd probably be okay with how that story's written, yes.
Now, going back to
the story of the NBA without Zion, Tommy. Is that a good segue?
Decent, because it is the next topic, but I did have something left here. Could you imagine betting on this? Will he be elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame with a 5-year future?
Does it come for like 10 years?
Or whatever it is for NFL.
Well, it's more than that, because like he's not going to be a first ballot guy. The NFL Hall of Fame is so weird, and like the ballot is so backlogged that it's going to take him like 10 or 15 years to get in.
Got to put that ticket in a safe place.
I know.
I mean, that ticket, yeah, that ticket's getting lost.
Like I did with my Giants ticket.
Crazy. That ticket's getting lost for sure. Now, the segue would have been perfect, Steve. Zion, he made his debut last night. Slow start, only 5 points through 3 quarters. They're only giving him the first 4 minutes of every quarter. And then he just went off in the fourth quarter. They kept him in for a few more minutes because he was red hot. Scored 13 points in a minute and a half. Finished with 17 in the quarter. It was one of the better 2-minute stretches of basketball that I think I've ever seen, honestly. It was riveting.
It was impressive. It happened just as I was getting off the air at Channel 9 last night. We had the game on in the office, and I saw the stats right around 11 o'clock when the show was starting. I was like, oh, he's only got 5 points. And then that he did that stretch like as I got off the air, and I mean, I'm right there with you, Tommy. Maybe the most impressive 2-minute stretch by an individual player that I've ever seen. I am still skeptical about how good he's really going to be in the NBA, but last night he absolutely lived up to the hype.
So you guys won't be able to understand how disappointed I was, because I got home last night. I had the game on for a little bit. I was like, Zion hasn't really done much of anything, and he's not even on the floor right now. it's been a long day. I'm going to, you know, wash up, get ready for bed, and, like, maybe I'll watch the game as I'm going to sleep. And so I got up. I turned my TV off in my living room. I started to brush my teeth, you know, wash up, you know, go and kind of look at, you know, get some water, get into bed. And by the time I got into bed and opened Twitter on my phone, it was like Zion, 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 Zion. And I was like, cool, missed all of it.
Yeah.
Every last bit of it.
You're the Zion Jinx.
I think so.
It was impressive. Again, I'm a little skeptical about how good he's going to be long term, but he was fantastic last night, and he makes me want to see more now. I mean, he was must see TV in college, and for the moment anyway, he's must see TV.
Now I got to be honest. I turned him on, or turned the game on, and I see Zion on the court physically, and you know I'm this simpleton. I'm a jersey guy. I'm a helmet guy. I'm a simpleton.
You didn't like how he looked in that red Pelicans jersey, did you?
He looks like a bust. Just physically. Now, maybe he looks... It's because he looks like Anthony Bennett a little bit. Maybe that's why.
He does.
But physically, on the court, that guy just screamed... But then the play in the fourth quarter obviously doesn't scream bust. But just physically how he looks very easily like he could be a bust.
I saw online today that apparently Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson were taking a lot of time talking about the weight gains that
they were fat-shaming him a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, Tommy, we got to run. Thank you for today's business. And with that, we're going to bring the show to an end. But one last piece of business. Caller 5 right now, 315-437-7644, registers for your chance to win a day after the big game party brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Be caller 5. You could be the hero of your office. Your office will be registered to win coffee, bagels, and donuts. They'll be delivered by some of your favorite ESPN Syracuse hosts. Your office will run on Dunkin', brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts and ESPN Radio Syracuse. Our thanks to all of our callers today. Great caller participation. For Seth Goldberg, I'm Stephen Fonte. Matt Park, Brian Higgins coming up next in the booth. We'll be back at it noon tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.